Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I'm Elizabeth Newman, representing the appellant here, Marshall Zolp. Your Honors, I'd like to focus on the loss issue today.
Could you help me with something on the loss issue? That was actually my focus, too, in preparing the case. It looks to me as though a critical question is whether the suckers in the pump-and-dump scheme could actually sell the stock for anything after it was all over. Zolp says it still had value, so the
Yes.
judge erred in his calculation of loss. The judge said, in a finding of fact by clear and convincing evidence, that it had no value,
Yes.
so he would subtract zero. I looked at a kind of mysterious chart of values that showed that it had value, but I couldn't tell whether the suckers could sell the stock or whether this was just a couple of trades between insiders to trade around the incidents of the lawsuit or and basically buy a lawsuit risk. I couldn't tell what it meant. Can the people that just bought the stock without being insiders get any money by selling it to anyone, or does the SEC suspension prevent them from selling the stock?
I'm really happy to hear the Court's question, because I do think that questions like that are exactly at the center of this appeal. Your Honor, the Court's question really points to the larger issue in the case. I think when preparing this argument and rereading our briefs, I think that both sides perhaps focused on some details in the case, but the larger issue in the case is, given that the chart, this mysterious chart, which begins at a point and ends at a point, and we don't know what happened afterwards, shows that stocks were trading for money.
Well, it shows that after the critical time in February 2002, there
yes.
were trades for money, but
exactly.
very little volume. And I can't tell whether the suckers could trade it for money.
Right. And the district court, I don't think, could tell either. And that's the larger point, Your Honor, that this is a very undeveloped record.
Well, ordinarily, I would infer from an SEC suspension of trading that they could not. So it has no value to them. Sometimes it's possible for somebody to have stock that he cannot trade. It has no value to him. But it may have value to somebody else.
Exactly,
not
Your
just,
Honor.
Not just stock, all kinds of
any,
things.
Pet Rock, for example, which might have no value, you know, to any person except the person who buys it and wants it for some bizarre marketing
A tiny landlocked parcel of a few square yards, no value to anyone except the adjacent gas station.
Exactly, Your Honor.
So could these people sell the stock for anything?
You know, Your Honor, I would like to know the answer to that question. I don't know the
Isn't
answer
it
to
your
that
problem
question.
To
I
a,
don't see...
You're trying to show that the judge made a mistake in a clear and convincing finding of fact.
Right.
And we have to find that he was clearly erroneous. Don't you have a burden to show us some evidence that he was?
Well, I don't think, with respect, Your Honor, I don't think that as a matter of answering the Court's specific question, could the investors who bought on the open market sell on the open market after February 1st, I think that question is a little bit separate from what's our burden to show anything on appeal. Because I think the question on appeal is, here you have the district court who made a very clear finding in very uncompromising language, these stocks are worthless. That was the word the court used. And so the question on appeal is, did the government meet its burden below to persuade the court by clear and convincing evidence that the value was actually zero?
It put in evidence that the SEC had suspended trading.
They did.
I understood that. Maybe I misunderstood it because I don't know enough about securities law. But I understood that to mean that one of the suckers who bought the stock high was now left with a worthless piece of paper because it was against the law to sell it.
Was that suspension a permanent suspension or a temporary suspension?
At the time, it looked like, well, it was.
At the time of trial, was it a
It was a permanent injunction. The permanent injunction was issued. So the stock has, you know, there's no trading. But, Your Honor, I think the question is, what did the evidence that the government presented to the district court show about the value of the stock?
I'm trying to understand what the record shows about suspension. If there were permanent suspension,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't understand, since there were trades here. Somebody was trading it.
Exactly.
In the face of a suspension. My understanding of the record, it was a temporary suspension pending whatever further proceedings
right.
happened. So while it may be interrupting the current ability to trade,
right.
it's not clear that that would translate into absolutely
worthless
stock.
No, it's not clear. And, I mean, there is a possibility, of course, that people were still trading the stock in the hope that the suspension would be lifted, that stock trading would resume, and that the stock would regain some value. As I think we pointed out at one point in our briefs, there is evidence that in the record that it does suggest that at least Megawatt was doing what it said it was doing, that is to say, manufacturing solar generators.
Does a suspension mean no trading on recognized stock exchanges, or does it mean this is now close to being contraband? You can possess it, but you can't sell it.
Well, Your Honor, I think the term that's used in the papers below is a gray market. Excuse me, I'm sorry.
That's a very broad term. It can mean all kinds of things.
It can.
You can buy gray market film. It's fine. It's perfectly legal to trade. It just means that Kodak meant that film for trade in Asia or Europe or someplace.
Exactly, Your Honor. And I think that the issue before the district court was, what does this mean? And does a gray market stock share have actual value
okay,
or no
mean?
Value? Well, I know only what's in the record, Your Honor, because I'm not an expert either.
Well, if you're going to show me that the district judge clearly erred, it would be a real help to show me what it means.
Well, I appreciate that, Your Honor, but I think that the question before the court is, did the government present enough evidence to show that the district court was correct, right?
Was there any evidence to the contrary, other than this chart at SER 125?
SER 125 is correct.
Where did it come from?
The government submitted it in discovery according to something that the parties said in open court below. So this is part of the government's evidence that it submitted as part of its case against Mr. Zolp. It showed that trading did continue.
Okay, was the stock listed on the pink sheets?
The stock was listed on the NASDAQ exchange,
okay.
Which is where it was traded.
Right. And when the SEC issued its injunction, did the injunction continue all through the pendency of the litigation in the district court?
You know, Your Honor, I really apologize because I don't know the answer to that question. But I think, again, the question before the district court was, does this stuff have value? Did it have value
But you're mistaking something, I believe, counsel. All of us are trying to understand where the value comes from, your client, if nothing was said in the lower court and all the district court had to look at was what the government put in, then the clear and convincing evidence standard is a little easier to meet. On the other hand, if there is evidence that we can take notice of or there's something in the record has not been pointed out, then maybe we can do something different because we realize it has a significant impact on the length of the sentence that your client received.
Very much so,
but we
Your
can't
Honor.
Just conjure this stuff out of thin air. We
no,
have
exactly,
to have evidence.
Your Honor. I think that the broad point here is that the record is undeveloped. You have this chart on one side which says stock trading continued, sometimes at a volume of 40,000 shares a day, even after the suspension.
And where did that come from?
That chart?
Yeah.
That chart was submitted by the government to the defense as part of the pre-sentence discovery.
So are you suggesting that the chart that the government produced that showed up to $40,000
shares,
being traded is in itself evidence of value that the court failed to take into account? Is that your concept?
Yes. That's on one side. And on the other side, the government was saying, well, the chart doesn't mean what you might think it means, mm-hmm. by pointing to other things in the record. So that's what the district court was faced with, Your Honor.
Did anyone put in a declaration?
No, Your Honor.
All we've got is this.
You have the entire record before you, Your Honor, in these
Would
two volumes of excerpts.
Save a little time for rebuttal. This is just so confusing. Maybe you'll have some questions to answer then.
Thank you, Your Honor. But I would submit that a remand is necessary so that the district court can clear up this confusion.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the Court, my name is Ellen Lindsay. I'm an assistant United States attorney in Los Angeles, and I'm responsible for the confusion below. And I'd like to say, first off, that I think it's very rude and unprofessional of opposing counsel to give me her cold. Other than that,
it's all the spirit of cooperation.
Indeed.
It's nice that you're sharing.
Just don't share it with us.
Yeah, right. Right.
I hope that maybe I can clear up a little of this confusion.
Could you start with just, since you've now assumed responsibility, does that extend to the notion that the government does, in fact, bear the burden of showing that the stock is worthless?
Your Honor, certainly in the court below, the government bore the burden of proving the loss beyond, well, the government, we're still reserving the right to say that it's just preponderance, but under the laws it is now clear and convincing. What is very difficult in this case, I believe, and I think Judge Smith really hit on this, and that is what record was before the judge. Personally, I think the record now demonstrates that the, well, I prefer to call them victims rather than suckers, but that the victims of this offense could not sell their stock, and I'll explain
much, much more refined. What does this chart on 125 mean?
Suckers. Oh, my God. I'm glad you're not one of my jurors. Anyway.
Don't count on it.
The thing is that the way the record came out the way it is that the defense raised all kinds of different challenges to the loss calculation. And on appeal only challenges that one little thing, which is whether the stock was worthless or not after the fraud was discovered. So below, what the defendant did was say, it's not worthless, and the reason it's not worthless is because of this chart that shows that there was all this, this is value up here, and this is
volume
down here.
That looks like 40,000 shares traded at around, I don't know, seven and a half in middle of April, which is well after the February close of trade.
Right.
Is that what it means?
Okay.
I don't know what this is.
Right. If I can explain it in just a second. What happened below was that the government responded, well, the chart shows all this volume here, I mean all this value, but the volume is extremely low. When you're talking
Wait, look at the bumps there. Look at that bump around April 15th, at least if I'm reading it right, which I don't know. That's why I'm asking.
Right.
It means around 40,000 shares. And then you go up from there to see the price, and it looks like around 7.5.
That's correct, Your Honor. But we're talking about 3.6, 3.7 million shares outstanding. And so...
But the court said it was worthless.
Right. And I'll address that.
If I bought at 50 and it's now selling for 7.5, maybe I want to hold on the gamble that they'll get out of the woods and it'll go back up into 40, 50, 60, 70 range. That can explain low volume on a legitimate stock. So you're not showing me that it's worthless by showing me that it trades at a low price and a low volume. If trading is prohibited, that's different.
Right. Well, below, what we did was there were not declarations, but there were memorandums of interview from the defendant who explained that, defendant raised the issue that the stock was worthless after the fraud was discovered. The government and cited only this chart. The government responded by citing to the defendant's own statements that the volume was extremely low and the only people who were able to trade at that time were these insiders who were able to cover people's shorts.
And where did that come from?
That came from the memorandums of interview of the defendant that were submitted.
So it was Mr. Zulp himself who, according to your understanding of the record, indicated that it was only the insiders who were trading, which would explain the low volume, but some value suggested in this. I gather this is SER 125.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, exactly. And below, the defendant did not contest that. He never raised the issue again.
I think I'm understanding something here. In a pump-and-dump scheme, it would be really smart for the insiders to sell short when they know they're going to make the top and then buy back after the stock crashes to sell the shorts. Are you saying that the purchases after February are short sellers covering their shorts?
That's what the record shows, yes, Your Honor.
He means shorts in a different sense than he might otherwise understand.
How do you cover your shorts if trading is suspended?
I thought
if trading was suspended on an exchange, you couldn't buy, you couldn't sell.
Yes, let me clear that up, Your Honor. The trading was suspended, and then the suspension was released.
Critical.
Yes. I didn't bring that up right away. Yes, and you can see it here on the chart because there's this very high volume of trading, and suddenly there's nothing, and then it starts up again. But
So when was suspension? So suspension was temporary, and
yes.
Then it was released the same month, sometime during February.
Right.
So then people could legitimately buy and sell the stock.
Right.
And it hung around two or three for a while, and then it got up for a short time to maybe $8, $8.50 a share, and then it settled around six?
Well, see, that I think is exaggerated, and it was explained below in the record that the reason it was so high is that people needed to cover their shorts, and the only people who were available to sell the stock were these insiders, namely Lynn Stratford. That was the state of the record. The defendant did not contest that Lynn Stratford was an insider. He did not contest that.
I would think you would need something more here. If it's legal to trade the stock, and if it's being traded on the NASDAQ, trades are going forward, people are covering their shorts, then there's nothing to stop people that bought the stock for 50 calling up their brokers and saying, sell it at market. And if a few thousand shares quickly depress the market to back down to $2 a share or less, that's still not worthless. It just means worth not very much, worth very little compared to what I paid for it.
Right. Let me explain that in a couple of ways. The first way is that these victims were not sophisticated, and that is also in the record.
I don't see where that bears on whether the stock is worthless.
Well, that they were unable, some of them didn't even get their shares, and that's also in the letters that they sent to the court, that they were not sophisticated. They didn't know how to go out there and find these brokers.
How did they buy in the first place?
I'm sorry?
How did they buy in the first place?
Because defendant solicited them.
So these were direct sales by the...
by the insiders, yes. And so these people were...
All of this trading before was all just insider...
Before.
Sales.
Yeah.
Was Stratford also indicted?
No, he was not.
So he's someone out there trading. There's nothing illegal about what he's doing.
Well, I wouldn't say that, Your Honor, because if you're talking about somebody who was able to see these press releases before the public saw the press releases.
My point here, counsel, is simply to this issue of what is worthless. The reality is you're saying that Lynn Stratford and perhaps others was trading, admittedly low volume, low price, but not worthless, perhaps even listed on the pink sheets.
Right. Well, then let me say that first of all, defendant below never provided any evidence of what value it might have to victims, suckers, as opposed to insiders. And
Did you present any evidence? What I would have expected, right, frankly, is a declaration by a specialist saying there is no market whatsoever at any price for this stock. except to a few insiders covering their shorts, and they've already done that.
Well, what we submitted, Your Honor, was the statement of the defendant, and then he did not contest it below. So once we answered with, actually, this chart shows that there was very little volume, and defendant himself says the only trading there was as a result of insiders able to cover shorts, then the defendant never said another word about it. He didn't respond on paper, and he didn't bring it up before the district court.
Show me what page to look for the critical words by the defendant.
Okay. It would be in my brief. While I'm looking...
I'm looking at the excerpts here.
Yeah. If I can multitask and look and say also that... that any error, that there is a huge amount of wiggle room here, because the guideline cutoffs are 7 million up to 20 million, and the court found the loss to be 18 million some odd. So we're talking about like $11 million leeway that the court had for any small value that the stock may have had before the next guideline step.
The chart says that the stock is unchanged at 6, or the quotes are unchanged at 6. So if it was $6 a share, would it still fall in the $7 to $20 million range of loss?
If it was $6 per share after, no, there wouldn't be any loss, because the average loss or the average stock price during the fraud when it was pumped up was 503. That was the defendant's figure that the government adopted. So that supports also that these numbers are very inflated by insiders who are holding back shares and just selling to people who had to cover shorts and therefore had to pay this.
I want to be sure I understand something you mentioned, counsel. Did I understand you correctly that there is an $11 million delta, if you will, which, if not exceeded, would not affect the sentence of the defendant. Is that correct?
Yes. The guideline cutoff is $7 million. It's $7 million to $20 million, and the court found that it was $18 million. So it's really a huge disparity. It's a little frustrating, Your Honor, because, as I said, the defendant did not contest what we said below. And it's only here that he's now challenging, for example, was Lynn Stratford an insider? You know, could the people not sell? Well, it was basically a proffer and out of the defendant's own mouth below, and he never contested it there. And certainly we would have presented more evidence had the defendant not apparently accepted what we said.
You happen to have run across what the defendant said yet?
Coming.
I know you were flipping for it while we were chatting.
I'm not very good at multitasking. Okay. It's in my response to the defense. And it
call off the excerpt page number, and I'll write it down and look at it.
Okay.
This is the defendant's response where he indicated that it was only the insiders who were trading. Is that what you're looking for?
I'm trying to find where Marshall Zolp talks about. You know, as a matter of fact, I think it's quoted. It may be quoted in the defendant's record, but it's in my response.
Thank you.
See, she gives me her cold. She gives me sights.
What are friends for, right?
That's exactly right. It would be towards the bottom of that page.
Okay, this looks like FBI agent or somebody writing down what happened in an interview.
That's correct. And in our papers, he's talking about the short sellers and how Stratford was selling to the short sellers. But in the papers, I also explained that explains the very small amount of volume of trading that was going on.
I still want to get back to this $11 million thing, because I had previously thought that this would make a significant difference. Is it because the court itself made a downward departure, a substantial downward departure? Is that the reason for the why this is such an insignificant thing, unless you have $11 million worth of losses?
No, it isn't, Your Honor, because we're talking about just the guideline calculation,
right,
before he made
pure
any
guidelines,
departure.
Right.
Right. And under 2B1.1, there's cutoff points for the loss. So if you have over $1.5 million, it's
right.
One thing.
So it's
and
pure
2.
Guidelines,
5.
Then, right?
And it goes from $7 million to $20 million.
Mm-hmm.
That's one whole step.
Okay.
So in other words, he would have to show that there's basically $11 million.
That's only if you start at $18 million. The paragraph that you've shown us is about Lampert. Lampert did not have any other way of getting rid of the stock, so he was happy to sell it at a dollar.
Well,
but Lampert is the Mexican insider. His situation in getting rid of the stock could be much more restricted than Aunt Mildred
here,
in
I'm
Dubuque.
Sorry. I'm sorry, Your Honor. Let me see if this was. Well, what that supports, Your Honor, is that there was this short squeeze afterwards. It's what I proffer basically in my papers at GER 130. And it starts at the bottom paragraph.
Well, that's just an argument. That's not any evidence.
Well, I think the evidence was what defendants said about the trading, of what the trading was. And then he did not contest what I consider this to be basically a proffer, saying there was really no trading except what the insiders were doing. And the defendant never contested it, which would have given us the ability to then make more arguments. For example, this is basic supply and demand kind of economics. There's really no demand for it except, as we said, the short sellers. So if there's no demand, there's really no value to the stock.
Would you agree, though, counsel, the judge characterized the stock as being worthless? Would you agree that the evidence that it was put on was very modest? Admittedly, the defense didn't come back with anything, but it was really modest. It's really hard to tell what it means. It was rather, I suppose, under any circumstance, a weak showing as to what value there was and who was trading. I know that's what you're saying, that's what the defendant said. But the reality is that somebody was out there trading. There is very little under oath. I think what was quoted a little while ago is an FBI agent saying what he thought Zolp said. So, and to some degree, it's an admission against interest, but it's hearsay. I mean, it's just weak evidence. Would you agree with that?
I don't think I would, and that's because I believe that the chart shows that the volume is so low that
but it shows value. It shows value.
Maybe a small, small, small amount of value. Maybe, you know, because what the government was saying was that it was virtually worthless. Even if there was some way that these insiders who didn't even have their stock certificate, these victims who didn't even have their stock certificates, if there's some way that they could have sold it, there's so little demand for it here. And what we said was the only demand was a few people out there who needed to cover their shorts, that there would be so little value to the stock that it wouldn't cover that whole $11 million.
We'll understand that part.
I suppose we probably beaten this into the ground about as much as we can. Unless my colleagues have more questions.
Thank you very much, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd just like to begin by saying that opposing counsel hates me for giving her my cold, but I didn't give her my bronchitis. She should be grateful. And we're in courtroom one, so you won't get it either. I would take issue, Your Honor, briefly with one thing that opposing counsel said, and that is that below we never reasserted that the shares did actually have value or go back on a proffer or anything like that. Of course we didn't go back on anything that we had proffered, but I would point the court to the sentencing hearing. It's page of the unsealed excerpts, page 40, round about line 15. It's defense counsel talking, and he said, the court has already commented, look, counsel, you've submitted a very long sentencing paper outlining your theory of loss and talking about why the other theories, the government's theory, the probation officer's theory, are, you know, should not be the theories that I adopt. The government, you know, has answered. I mean, it's been a very full set of briefing. Does anyone have anything to say? And so counsel is trying to accommodate the court, read the court, and be a little bit brief, but what he does say is, the best figure that I can come up with that is reasonable, I didn't want to take a low figure, da-da-da, but basically he reasserts in this paragraph what he says in his sentencing papers, which is to say the stocks did have value. And I think beyond that, Your Honor, I think that Judge Smith has hit it, the nail on the head in saying that this paragraph on sealed excerpts 142, which is all about Lampert trying to unload some stock or Stratford doing this, doesn't really say anything about duration. How, when did this occur? How long did it go on for? Volume? What happened? Or who these buyers were, and why were they willing to pay for it? And what happened to the rest of these shares?
I read the rest of that statement just now. It says, the best figure I can come up with, being fair and everything, is a 16-level increase. It still doesn't tell me what the stock is worth. Is there more?
You know, to go back and get a little bit detailed, Your Honor, the defense below had suggested that the court's methodology should be to take the stock price before the fraud, the stock price over the course of the fraud, and use the inflated value multiplied by the number of shares. And so that was the defense methodology. And when the government came back and said, no, do it this way, the stock was absolutely worthless, the defense came back and is basically reasserting, no, Your Honor, I really think you should do it in the way that we suggested. But he's not saying, we agree that the stock was worthless, we agree that the only people selling were insiders or anything like that. And so I would take issue a little bit with opposing counsel on that. And I think that the court's questions today and the court's, you know, grappling with what happened in this case, what happened over the course of the fraud, who were these people who were trading, just shows that there's some real confusion in the record. The evidence is very inconclusive. And although the swing has to be big in order to get below a 20-level increase for loss, I mean, there were certainly other theories and other ways to do it. I mean, the defense theory.
So your theory was puffed value minus before and after value.
Minus before value, Your Honor.
Times share sold. Their theory was puffed value minus zero times shares sold.
Precisely.
The judge took their theory.
That's how I read it, Your Honor.
All I've got to determine whether there was enough of a basis for the judge's finding not to be clearly erroneous is that chart at page 120.
Right, Your Honor. Plus, I mean, the chart is there. The government says, well, the chart doesn't mean what, you know, you might think it means. These shares didn't actually have volume, even though this chart says they were trading at 6.5, 7.5, 8 on a volume of sometimes 40,000.
The chart doesn't show a value of 6, even though that's the quote.
Right.
Because there are not a significant number of trades at 6.
Right, even though it's 40,000 shares on a very small cap company. I mean, this wasn't General Electric. And I think that, I mean, when you look at what this case, when you look at this case, I mean, the first thing that jumped out at me preparing was people were buying it, and it's sort of a classic measure of value that people were paying money for it. it's really unclear from this record how the district court decided what it did. I won't take up the court's time anymore. Thank you, Your Honors. And stay in good health.
Unless my colleagues have more questions, United States versus Zolp is submitted.